Broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from The Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign. The staff at The Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting WILL AM 580.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Well, we are now headed into that time here in Illinois when we get most of our tornadoes. Now, it is possible to have a tornado in any month of the year, and in fact, they have occurred here in Illinois in every month of the year. But here in the state of Illinois, nearly 80% of all of the tornadoes occur from April through June. And in fact, not too long ago, we had an outbreak of tornadoes on the 12th of March. I think for a lot of people, that was a reminder that indeed we do have that kind of weather this part of the country at this time of the year. And it's a good thing to be prepared, to think a little bit about what would happen if a tornado came down your street. We'll be talking about that this morning and also give you a chance to ask questions about the weather. And our guest is Ed Kieser. He's our chief meteorologist here at WILL. This is something we do every once in a while because we know that people are curious about the weather and they'd like to ask questions that might take a minute or two to answer. We can't, when we do the regular talk-to segments, the idea there is if you're traveling, you can get a weather forecast for the place that you're going. And we did that this morning. We'll be doing that this afternoon on the Afternoon Magazine. That's not what we're doing here this morning. We can't do that. But if you have other kinds of questions about weather and how it works and how forecasters track it and try to determine what the weather is going to do, all of that, and specifically if you have questions about tornadoes or about tornado safety, that's what we're doing here this morning. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere that you can hear us. 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Hey, thanks for being here.
Good to be here. Thanks.
Maybe we should mention, too, that your annual tornado show is coming up here in about 2 weeks, I guess.
Less.
Well, I guess that's right. It's less than 2 weeks. It's April 11th.
I know that more than anyone because there's a lot of work still yet to be done.
Okay. So that's Tuesday, April 11th, 7 o'clock in the evening at the Beckman Institute Auditorium on North Matthews. And it's free. And you can park for free in the parking garage that's at University and Matthews. And you better come early because these events have become very popular. And when all the seats are taken, that's it. I don't know. If there's any possibility for overflow if the auditorium fills up?
They may have the opportunity. I know one year that we had a closed circuit TV right in the next room, and then people could come over and ask their questions still. So we'll see what happens.
Okay. Tuesday, April 11, 7 o'clock.
Yeah, that's one part of it I don't worry about. I'll let other people worry about all that.
Well, we did here on the 12th of March, we had a tornado outbreak here. I'm looking at the webpage for the Weather Service, the local Weather Service office, the one in Lincoln. And apparently there were at least 7 tornadoes across their warning area, their county warning area. And we know it passed over right over Springfield and did quite a lot of damage there. And I think part of our reason thinking about it'd be a good thing to do this show was that throughout the fall and the winter, you're not thinking about tornadoes. But when that first one comes, then I'm sure people are running around thinking about, where's the flashlight? Do we have batteries for the radio? Do we have a plan? And you really ought to be thinking about that. Be good to be thinking about that stuff before it happens, so that if something like that happened, you'd pretty much be ready to go.
And that's why we're here today. So it's a good time for you to ask questions. If you have any about severe weather or tornadoes or anything else, really, this is a good opportunity. I will say that it does look like this season is unlike the last few in that we're starting earlier. We already had that big outbreak March 12th. Yesterday, the timing of the front coming through is such that most of the action was to our west, and today there may be a little bit to our east. Some of our listeners in Indiana may end up having some severe thunderstorms today. And it looks like Sunday there's another chance. We're into an active weather pattern. The last few years it really hasn't kicked in until May. So this year it's back to April and March, and that's the time of year where sometimes we get our worst tornadoes. A lot of the violent tornadoes tend to occur early in the season, so this is the time of year to really watch out.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have someone with a question here already. We'll get right to them in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Oh, hello. Yes, I was just calling about weather for Indianapolis. I was going to be there Saturday and Sunday, and I specifically was planning to be outside Sunday for a little music concert. I didn't know if it was supposed to rain and be nasty or sunny and warm, hopefully.
Well, we're really not doing that on this show this morning.
I'm sorry.
I tried to sort of make that clear. We will do that this afternoon on the afternoon magazine.
At 12:40 Central Time. Now, you're calling from here, so you're on our time and not the Indiana time right now. I'd say it does look like showers and thunderstorms are rolling into the area on Sunday, so the later in the day you get Sunday, the better chance of rain. But I'll have my maps in front of me at 12:40. I'm actually not in my office right now.
Gosh, okay, sorry about that. I missed the beginning.
Okay,
no problem.
That's okay.
No problem. Okay. Thanks for calling.
All right.
We are here this morning with our meteorologist, Ed Kieser, and we thought it'd be an opportunity. And we have done these shows now at least a couple times a year, particularly at the times when we're gearing up for the severe weather season to come, to give people a chance to ask questions about forecasting, about how the weather works, about getting ready for severe storms, that kind of thing. And we do that here on Focus because sometimes these questions, you know, it might take a couple minutes to answer. And so save your forecast questions, save your travel weather questions, 12:40. We're going to do it then. Are you doing it?
Yeah, I'm doing it today.
Okay,
last time for a while, though, because we're doing our big schedule switch that we do about every month or so. And I'll be going to the evening shift for a while and do your weather on WILL-TV, and Mike Sola will be coming back to mornings and middays through the month of April. So this will be my last talk to for a while.
All right. Well, we have some other questions here. Let's talk again with a champagne person. Line one. Hello.
Hi. Can you tell me, in terms of the little weather radio type alarm devices that warn you if a tornado is coming while you're sleeping, can you tell me if one particular kind or another is better, you know, in terms of brands or functions, and where does one purchase those?
Okay, as far as I don't have a specific brand that I recommend, in part because I haven't gotten to test a lot of them out because, I just have one weather radio for my home, and there are several reliable brands out there. I think what most people would like to get nowadays would be what's called a SAME weather radio. And SAME means specific area message encoding. And what that means is you can program it to your specific county so it only alerts you and wakes you up for your county. The older tone alert weather radios and some of the cheaper ones just activate on a tone put over the weather radio station, and the one that serves Champaign, Urbana, for example, covers 9 counties. So then you would have the alert go off for anything in any of those 9 counties, whether it's in the Champaign, Urbana area or not. But with the same radio, you could program it to say just Champaign County. Or some people I know around here also put Piatt County into the one immediately to the west to get a little extra warning. So those are the better radios, and they can be purchased, without giving any stores any, I'm not giving any, what should I call it?
Plugs,
yeah, but I know Radio Shack has sold weather radios for years. I think Kay's Merchandise sells them, and there are many other stores. Any store really that sells radios sells these. I know a couple of years ago, Jerry's IGA had a weather radio promotion on. I don't know whether they have them this year or not. Most of those same radios run anywhere from $35 to $70. Obviously, the more you spend, the more gadgets you get on it. And some weather radios are now combined with other features, too, and other radio bands. But the thing I think I would recommend anybody listening, including you, is get one with the same technology,
okay.
SAME.
Thank you very much.
All right,
okay, thanks
good.
For calling.
Thank you.
And really, a tone alert weather radio activated by the National Weather Service is the best way to be alerted in the middle of the night. Now, sometimes you may get a little upset with it waking you up for a watch, but that's why we say just get one for your specific county. But we've seen in the past year, tornadoes hitting in the middle of the night, including that really devastating tornado in Evansville last November. And this is one way in which you can be alerted.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Let's go to Tolona, line two.
Yes, hello. Mm-hmm. I understand that tornadoes kind of run in a particular track typically. Well, when you see the little maps, when they have tracking diagrams, they'll see them from the running from the southwest to the northeast. With that in mind, I was wanting to know, when you do take shelter in your basement, is there a certain corner of the basement or certain side of the basement you should be in?
No, not really. First off, at this time of year, you are correct in looking at the tracks. Many tornadoes come from the southwest or west-southwest, but not all tornadoes come from the same direction. And in fact, the prevailing direction as we get later into the season, say from late June on through the summer, even though we don't get as many tornadoes, often they come from the northwest. So they don't all come from the same direction. But as far as the basement, what you want to do is get under something sturdy, wherever that happens to be in the basement. And a staircase is one place I recommend, because that's built in there, and that's one easy place to find. Otherwise, a workbench or some heavy furniture, or if you happen to have a bathroom in the basement, a smaller room is better than a bigger one. Being out in the open is not good, and being in just any particular corner is not going to be particularly good, because with the swirl of the wind, debris can fall anywhere in the basement. And also, just being in the middle of the basement, we've learned, isn't good, because the year before last in Utica, some people were killed in the basement of a tavern when the beam collapsed right in the middle of the basement. So we recommend you get under something sturdy wherever that happens to be in the basement.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Well, let's talk again with somebody else here. This is caller in Rankin, line number 4.
Hello. Hi, Ed.
Hi.
I was wondering if you can talk about the advancements in technology for detecting probably micro changes in climate, or the meteorological conditions. When we had those straight line winds, I actually felt extreme low pressure on my own body, and they say animals can predict weather. I was wondering if there is some subsonic component or barometric pressure changes that might be predictive of like a sneak attack from a tornado, and I'll hang up.
It's true that in the center of a tornado, the air pressure is significantly lower than surrounding areas, but you don't really detect that well in advance. When there are rapid drops in pressure, some animals do react to that. I think some people that say they have a trick knee that can forecast the weather, I think sometimes the rapid drop in air pressure helps trigger some of the pain that certain people feel. So on one level, there is definitely some truth to the change in air pressure and decrease in air pressure, rapid decrease in air pressure that some animals can detect and some people can feel. But as far as using that as a forecasting tool, I don't think that really is ever going to be too practical. It just, if you know yourself that when you feel those conditions, something bad's about to happen, just react accordingly and take cover. But unfortunately, that's not something that's universal that all people can use, or fortunately maybe, because some don't experience pain as much as others. And as far as the really low pressure in the center of a tornado, you really can't detect that very long in advance. I've talked to people who chase storms that have been right near a tornado, and their ears will pop due to the decrease in air pressure. But usually when your ears are popping, you are in harm's way already. So you're not given a 5 or 10 minute notice on that. It's there. You're either going to get hit or you're going to have a really close miss.
Yeah. Okay. Other questions welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. The guest here this morning in this first hour of Focus 580 is Ed Kieser. He's our chief meteorologist for WILO. We're talking about severe springtime weather and how to be prepared. I'm not sure that for most people how much attention they pay to the barometer readings that we give. Generally, I guess I think that a rising barometer is a sign of fair weather coming, and if it's falling, particularly if it's falling rapidly, that means there's a storm coming. Is that pretty much right?
And that's what you use a home barometer for. The raw number of, say, 30.21 inches of mercury doesn't really matter much unless you're setting your barometer just to give it a reference point. What really matters when you're looking at your home barometer is whether the air pressure is rising or falling. And falling air pressure means low pressure is approaching, stormy weather is approaching. Now, if a tornado is approaching your house right before it hits, you might see it rapidly drop. But again, if that's happening,
don't be standing there in front of the barometer.
It's there.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. We have some other callers. Champagne, I believe, here. Yes. And that's line one. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
Ed, I'm curious if you could help us understand what creates or causes hurricanes versus tornadoes. I mean, I realize they're two different animals, but I don't know that I truly understand why they're two different animals and what causes them to happen.
Okay, well, I'll comment a little bit on each, and I'll have to talk about each separately because they are really two different animals. About the only thing that's about the same is they both have low pressure at their center, and both have winds rotating around that center. For a hurricane in the northern hemisphere, it's always counterclockwise. For a tornado, it's usually counterclockwise. But tornadoes are much, much smaller in size. That's the first contrast I can give you. A tornado typically does not exceed a mile in diameter, only in rare cases, where hurricanes on average are somewhere between 300 and 500 miles in diameter. They're much bigger storms. And tornadoes come from thunderstorms that are rotating. When you have a significant amount of instability, which is a rapid drop in temperature with height, and also a significant amount of wind shear, a change of wind direction and an increase in wind speed with height. And that wind shear is created in part when you have a strong jet stream aloft, and that is created by differences in air temperature from it being very cold to the north and much warmer to the south. Hurricanes don't want any wind shear at all. They grow vertically. Basically, a hurricane is a cluster of thunderstorms, a large cluster of thunderstorms that develops when the ocean water is very warm, 80 degrees Fahrenheit or higher, and that helps make the atmosphere unstable. So there's the instability there where warm air rises and you get thunderstorm clusters that start to rotate. But to maintain a hurricane strength, it has to stay over warm water and it has to stay in an area that doesn't have strong winds aloft, because strong winds aloft would tear it apart, or what we call shear it. Some people refer to the hurricane being sheared apart. So there's a big difference there. Hurricanes are what we call warm core systems. The center of a hurricane is warmer than its surroundings, whereas tornadoes come from thunderstorms, which are usually around middle latitude cyclones, which are cold core systems. And
you hear about the energy transfer where you've got a hurricane going over a body of warm water will increase the size of the hurricane. What's happening that causes that?
Basically, if the water is very warm, you have a lot of moisture, which is the fuel for the storm, and the very warm water leads to rising air because warm air is less dense. And once you have the air rising, all that moist air rising, it cools, condenses, and makes a cloud. And when a cloud is created, you have condensation. You go from water being in the gas phase to the liquid phase. And during condensation, there's a process of what we call the release of latent heat due to condensation. And that heat is actually energy that helps get the storm to continue to grow. So the warm water, the very warm large body of water is just the fuel source for a hurricane.
Okay. Well, thank you very, very much.
Well,
I don't know if I've completely got it all out there clearly, but
and so why is it then, or maybe that you really have explained that, why is it then when you get a hurricane that moves from the water and starts to move over a big landmass, then generally it will weaken in its intensity.
It'll weaken because it's losing its moisture source and its warmth, the warm source as well. A hurricane that moves over colder water will also weaken. In general, you need the surface temperature of the water to be around 80 degrees or higher for a hurricane. Mm-hmm. So it's very sensitive to that. And that's why hurricane season really runs from June through November. It takes water much longer to warm than it does land. So there's kind of a lag in the season there. So really, early fall is prime time for hurricanes because that's when the water temperatures are typically the warmest in the oceans. And of course, in the southern hemisphere, the season's reversed from what it is here. Mm-hmm. There again, when the ocean water temperatures are warmest.
Okay, well, let's go on to someone in Indiana, line four. Hello.
Hello. I'd like for you to speak to the, you know, the contemporary getting of data. I remember the days when I used to go out and whirl my dry, wet bulb, and you know, to get the dew point. I was wondering what the dew point, how it's done now at those little stations they have peppered around the country. And when they say a mile or a half mile visibility, just what in the hell do they mean? Is there some sort of a huge silo off a mile, and if you can read letters on it, everything's okay, or what? How is that determined, or is it vapor water, you know, per cubic meter, or whatever it is? Yeah, I think those two are the ones I was after. Thanks
okay,
a lot.
Okay, well,
first off, he was referring to the old sling psychrometer, where you went out and got the dry bulb temperature and wet bulb temperature. In the wet bulb, you put a little wet shoelace on the end of the thermometer and swing it around, and the evaporation off that shoelace would cool the temperature on that thermometer down. And when it got as cool as it would get by evaporating water, that's a wet bulb. And from there, you could use tables that were set up that had been calculated previously for if you have a dry bulb of this, which is the regular temperature, and the wet bulb of that, here's your dew point. Or if you have the dry bulb of this and wet bulb of that, here's your relative humidity. Nowadays, it's done more with electronic sensors, and the dew point temperature is collected more directly. And a lot, most of the weather observations that we get are from airports, and most of the observations are now done automatically. So there's nobody out there slinging the psychrometer anymore, at least at most locations. I'm sure there's still a few climate stations where that's done. As far as visibility goes, basically the visibility reported is how far you can see. That's also done now by electronic sensors sending a beam of radiation out. And sometimes the automated sensors don't do the best job. So the bigger airports still have what we call augmented observations, where a person will actually make corrections to the observations. And sometimes the visibility is variable in different directions. So some of the reports we get will indicate the visibility along a runway, for example. That's very important at an airport. But, yeah, the visibility, a quarter mile, that means you can see a quarter of a mile and not beyond that. A visibility of 8 miles means you can pick out a target 8 miles away. And in the old days when humans did it, they would have a chart in their tower with different landmarks at certain distances. And they say, okay, I can see that one but not that one. So that's how far we can see today. And nowadays, 10 miles seems to be the standard. With the automated sensors, if you can see more than 10 miles, they just report 10 miles. I remember the old days when some of the observations from stations out in the Rockies would report a visibility of over 100 miles.
Useless.
It tells you the air is very clear because around here you can almost rarely would you be able to see that far because of haze.
Yeah.
We're in a hazier area here, and that's what reduces visibility: haze, fog, and precipitation. So the lower the visibility, the more concern there is as far as aircraft being able to land. There are certain rules for pilots when the ceiling or the bottom of the cloud gets too low, and when the visibility gets too low, there's certain parameters in which you need instruments to land, and only certain rated pilots are allowed to land a plane. And obviously, if it gets down to zero, sometimes nobody's allowed to land a plane.
We're midway through here. The guest is our chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser. We're talking about weather, your opportunity to ask questions about weather and how it works. And particularly here, we are talking about severe spring, summer weather. We are into that time of year where we get most of our tornadoes. Almost 80% of all tornadoes here in the state of Illinois occur from April through June. They can occur in any month. They have, but most of them are at this time of the year. And also maybe I'll mention again that Ed will be doing his annual tornado show coming up on Tuesday, April 11th, 7 in the evening at the Beckman Institute Auditorium. And they'll be doing little things like talking about how tornadoes form and how they're forecast. He always has video, and that's always pretty cool to see. And also we'll go over some of the basic guidelines for tornado safety. Questions here are welcome, and we have several people ready to go. And next, we'll talk with someone in Urbana. Line 2. Hello.
Hello. Very interesting program. I would like to ask a question about if there is any research done on the possibility of dissipating or stopping tornado. I know there is some technology out there that if there is a rainy day, for example, you can spray from an airplane, you can spray some powder or some chemicals so the rain stops. Do you think there is any research done on the possibilities how to stop tornadoes once they are detected?
What, stop the...
Yeah, to stop a tornado. You know,
tornado?
Say if you had a big tornado, and could you go out there and do anything to break it up?
No, and the reason for it is the tornadoes, when you look at the entire countryside and you look at all the thunderstorms that occur even... tornadoes occupy such a little area and a little amount of time. So there's really no way of knowing where a tornado is going to occur for sure. You can get an idea that a certain day will have thunderstorms with tornadoes, and then when you see the thunderstorms on radar, you can say, okay, that one will likely produce a tornado. But you don't have enough advance warning to get out there and dissipate the tornado. And then the only way you'd even know is once it's happening. And once it's happening, it's really not safe to fly around a tornado. So I don't think there's ever going to be a way to mitigate tornadoes. I could be wrong, but I don't see that coming down the line. You go even into the movies such as Twister, and they'd show instrument packs being parked in the path of a tornado by these researchers. And that has been attempted, maybe not those exact instrument packs, but there's been attempts to intercept tornadoes with instruments out in the plains for years. And when those projects have occurred, rarely have they actually gotten the instrument right into a path of a tornado. Because there, it's even more complicated. One, you got to find the tornado on the ground. You can't be flying into it, so you're limited by how fast you can drive. You're limited by your road network. And then you have to get in far enough ahead to leave the pack and get out of there.
And well, hope the tornado then goes right where
right
you
there.
Go.
So it's really, when you look at how small a tornado is compared to the vast expanse of landscape that we have, it's just darn near impossible.
Well, you can shoot a missile, like a small missile, which will spray, you know, a proper chemical maybe. But, okay, so as far as you know, there's no much research at this time.
No. I think the research right now is more focused on getting storm-scale motions and collecting data from storms that produce tornadoes, and actually those that you would think would produce a tornado, and then it doesn't happen. Because there's sometimes it'll look like this one's got to produce a tornado. The storm has strong rotation. It has all the characteristics of what you would think would produce a tornado, and then it doesn't happen. So collecting data from a lot of storms and studying that is really where I think most of the research is right now.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go.
And I'll just add, and that leads to better forecasting so that we can cope with it better. But and that would have to happen before you could even try to mitigate the effects of a tornado. And I just don't see that ever happening.
Well, I think certainly what is true is that we have gotten better at forecasting and better in predicting where the storms are likely to happen, and also have gotten better at giving. It's certainly not a perfect system, but we've gotten better at giving people advance warning who are in the path of the tornado. And it sounds like that's about the best that we can do, is just give people as much notice as possible if we think that a tornado is going to go right over where they are.
And I think there will be improvements in that over time still. That I've seen a lot of improvement in my career already, and I think it's going to get better, but never be perfect.
All right. Lamoille, I think, is the next caller here. Line number three. Hello.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah.
Thanks for taking my call. Your station is very informative on markets and that. We're like a little farming community here west of Mendota, and actually we're like northwest of a tragic scene from Utica. And I remember that day, the 20th of April, when it was, well, we were working ground. It was awful windy, and from out of nowhere, it kind of started the Granville area when that kind of popped up and kind of led the path along the Illinois River. And sad to say, it happened. The worst of it was at Utica. But in the past year or so here, the community has really, really done a lot and pulled himself together. And you have to give those people a lot of credit down there. It's all what happened with them. And then another comment here, then I'll hang up. In 2004, at our area, it was July 13th, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
There was a little system that came through. It kind of came out of the northwest. It got awful dark. And just west of us, a little town, Van Horn, got hit. And it did a little damage, but not severe. But I remember that day I took off from work, and I was going to mow some grass, and I said, boy, that was like an old saying is, big raindrops, well, it's not going to last long. Well, that wasn't the case. It really came up, and it hailed here, and then I knew, we have our dog here, our family dog, when she went underneath the kitchen table, I knew something was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So, actually, I really should have took cover, but it didn't last long. It really blew pea-sized hail. And then we got your marble size. Then it got real still. It was like 60 degrees, I mean cold. I went outside and I heard this thump. Every so often, there was softball size hail. It fell just straight down. And that was just odd. I remember picking that up. But anything can happen. I mean, it just out of nowhere. You just have to be on your guard. And then getting back to warnings for people, man, Doppler radar and that has come along in advance to help, you know, inform the public. And again, I just thank you for your comments, and then I'll hang up from there and appreciate talking to you.
All right. Well, thanks for the call.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Yeah, in 2003 and 2004 were both big tornado years in Illinois, and he mentioned the Utica tornado on April 20th a couple of years ago, and I'm glad to hear the town is getting coming together there, because that was a tragic tornado. And for those that don't know where Utica is, it's the town closest to Star Rock State Park right along the Illinois River. So it's a popular area for tourists. The July 13th situation he talked about, there was actually an F4 tornado in central Illinois that day, and he is correct. They were moving from northwest to southeast. And the tornado that was F4 hit near Roanoke. The Parsons manufacturing plant was destroyed. And the good news there is that company had a tornado plan in place, and a very thorough plan in place, including tornado-safe rooms. Some of the bathrooms they built to be super strong, and they had a policy where when a watch is issued, even or even a severe thunderstorm, they watch out. And when there's a severe thunderstorm warning issued, they'd have an employee actually watch the sky. The employee noticed a tornado forming, got everybody into shelter. They had over 100 people there. Not one person was injured, and the place was destroyed. Right. So that's one of those good stories that we could talk about. And the atmosphere was extremely unstable that day. The dew point temperature was over 80 degrees on July 13th of 04. Similar to the conditions when Plainfield and Crest Hill and Will County were hit by an F5 tornado on August 28th of 1990.
Okay.
And that was also a northwest to southeast moving storm.
And what time of the year was that?
That was August. That was the only F5 since 1950 in the U.S. in the month of August. So it was a rare event. Mm-hmm. But the atmosphere was very unstable that day. It was very humid, very warm, very, very humid.
Yeah. That's, you know, we talked a little earlier. We had that caller had the question about the dew point. And I know from having done these programs from time to time, people, they're confused about that. They're not sure what it means. And I guess probably for most people, just the only thing is that it's an indication of how much moisture there is in the air. And the way I think about it is, and the way you explained it, the higher the dew point when you go outside, the more uncomfortable you're going to feel, because that's when it's really sticky and it feels really sticky and oppressive because there's so much moisture in the air.
Well, it's a temperature which air must cool for saturation to occur. So the higher the dew point, the higher the temperature which the air must cool for saturation to occur, which means there's more moisture in the air. And usually when the dew point gets into the mid-60s, we start to say it's humid. When it's in the 70s, it's uncomfortable. On a couple of occasions a year, it gets over 80 degrees, and that's when it's ridiculous. Yeah, just ridiculous. And that also means the atmosphere is potentially very explosive. And in the case of July 13th of 04 and August 28th of 1990, it exploded.
So that would be another indicator, a thing that if you on a particular day, if you saw that kind of if the dew points were getting at that range, that would be another thing that would say to you, well, this is a sign that there's the possibility we could have.
Yeah, it depends on what's going on aloft. If it's really hot aloft, the air will still be stable and you won't get storms. But if you have that chance to pop a thunderstorm, it will probably be a huge thunderstorm.
Right. Well, let's talk with some more folks here. And Kankakee will be next, line one. Hello.
Listening to Ed Keyser is always a pleasure. He seems to possess a wealth of meteorological knowledge and wisdom.
Thank you.
Are there places where tornadoes are statistically more likely to occur in tornado alleys, that is, routes where tornadoes are statistically more likely to take? And if so, how significant are the trends? Also, what would explain a snow flurry on a day when the temperature is 70 degrees, as occurred in our fair city one fine day in July a few years back? Thank you.
Okay.
Well, the second question I can't answer. I can't even imagine a snow flurry with a temperature of 70 degrees. I don't know. I hadn't heard of that even being reported. So, yeah, that's one of those things where I'd have to say, show me. I'd have to be a Missouri person there and just say, show me, because that just seems impossible to have a snowflake at 70 degrees. As far as tornado tracks, there are areas that are more prone to tornadoes than others. Within the entire tornado alley area, the greatest risk for tornadoes as far as a tornado per square mile would be right in the middle of Oklahoma. The state that gets the most tornadoes is Texas, in part because it's a large state, but it's also a state that has a high density of tornado occurrences. But right from Texas through Oklahoma into Kansas and Nebraska, that's your main tornado alley. But then it kind of, there's a secondary area over parts of Illinois into Indiana. So that's why we have to watch out too. As far as tracks go, early in the season, generally southwest to northeast. But I think some people say, oh, the tornado always takes this track or goes to this town. I think if you look at the statistics, it really isn't the case. Statistically, if you look at the state of Illinois and track by county the number of tornadoes, you find that the counties with the highest number of tornadoes also tend to be the bigger counties and the counties with a higher population. And I think that's just because there's more people that detect the tornadoes, and especially the smaller ones. So McLean County is the number one county for tornadoes, but in the top 10, you would have Champaign and Cook and Sangamon, and I think Logan is up there now with Lincoln, but you start to see a trend where there's a clustering around population, and it's not because there's more tornadoes there. It's just more are detected.
Mm-hmm. People are not attracting their tornadoes.
No, there are more people
to spot them.
And mobile home parks do not attract tornadoes. It's just that you get more damage when one is hit, so that's where the cameras go. Yeah. If it bleeds, it leads, as they say in some news circles.
Yeah. Okay. We got our meteorologist here, our chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser, and we're talking about severe springtime weather. We are now in that time of the year where we get most of our tornadoes. That's April through June. And it's a good thing to think about what you do if there was a tornado warning and a tornado was headed your way. And if you have questions, you can give us a call. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Leroy is next, line number four. Hello.
Hello, Ed. Yeah. Always a pleasure to hear you. I know that we're always going to get the best forecasting based on scientific information. And along those lines, could you give us what your take is on global warming and what its impact would be on the formation of hurricanes, tornadoes, and things that go round and round? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Right. Okay. I'm not going to talk much about global warming because I'm not an expert on that. That's more of a climate issue. I will just say the evidence is there that shows that the average temperature of the planet is warming. So that's the first thing we can say. And as far as the immediate impacts on climate, there's still some question about exactly what will happen with this climate change that's going on. I think the first worry really is with the rise of sea level. As far as hurricanes, the last couple of years have been really high frequency years for Atlantic Basin hurricanes. I have not talked to too many scientists that believe that that's really due to global warming. The number of storms more is a trend that we see in the record going back more than a century of peaks and valleys. And it might have to do with some of the circulations and water currents in the Atlantic Ocean more than anything else. And we are in an active period. It started in about 1995. Now, it's just the last 2 years that active period has really shown itself in a big way on the U.S. coast. There were some years where there were a lot of hurricanes and tropical storms that stayed out in the Atlantic. Now, as far as the intensity of hurricanes, there is some speculation that global warming may be a contributor to that. The Gulf of Mexico has been running quite warm, and that was a problem last season when the storms such as Katrina, Rita, and Wilma hit a certain part of the Gulf of Mexico where there was a warm ocean current. That's when those storms explosively developed and went quickly to Category 5 strength. Fortunately, they weakened a little bit before making landfall, but the concern, I think, near term would be there are more Category 3, 4, and 5 storms than there were due to global warming. But the global warming is the warming of the average temperature of the Earth. There's still going to be cold areas and warm areas, and there's a lot of questions on what this means as far as individual little weather systems.
Okay.
So I'm not going to say more than that because I'm not an expert on it.
All right. Let's go to Champaign. This is line number two. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here's a question on the what to do during these storms. Last fall, when there was a big one coming in, they said, shut off everything, go downstairs, turn your breakers off, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then this past storm, just in, you know, a couple of weeks ago, people weren't saying that on the radio. They were just, you know, saying, well, stay tuned, but they didn't say, turn off your refrigerator and turn your breakers off. And
I've never said that. I don't, that must be somewhere else. You can go on with your question, but I just want to say I've never gotten into that in any of my broadcasts.
Well, I guess maybe that's what we were listening to you this time, because we didn't hear that this time. But why do people suggest that? I mean, that's my question. What should you do in your house? You know, unplug everything? Or, I mean, you know, taking cover, of course, is the first thing. But as far as, like, electrical storms, because I think that's what was happening last fall. It was just lightning everywhere, and
right.
I think that must have been why they were saying to do that. Of course, we were also watching Tornado, the movie, at the time, so it was pretty scary just to think about what was going on. But so I'm just calling just to find out what should we be doing besides taking cover during storms, you know, because I've heard of refrigerators exploding. One of our neighbors actually had her the gas line that goes to her fireplace exploded during that storm last fall. And, I mean, I don't know if you can do anything for that either. But
well, okay, I'll be glad to comment on some of that. First off, what you're talking about is a risk with any thunderstorm, not just the big one that we covered on March 12th, where the big concern was a significant tornado that could destroy houses. Any thunderstorm has lightning, and lightning can strike anywhere on the ground and come into your house in a variety of ways. And what we advise during electrical storms or lightning storms is do not interact with anything that is connected to the walls, be that plumbing, electricity, or telephone lines.
Plumbing?
Yeah, you can get electrocuted taking a shower.
Wow.
From a lightning storm, if the lightning hits the pipes, the metal pipes in the house. So if you want to talk on the phone, use a cell phone or a cordless phone. If you want to watch TV, just don't touch the TV. Keep in mind that if your house happens to be hit and it's not well grounded, your TV could be fried by lightning. And that happens every year to many people. So anything that's plugged in is at a risk for a lightning storm. But I wouldn't go and unplug absolutely everything in the house. I would be careful with computers, though. Anything that's very sensitive or very expensive, you might want to unplug anytime there's a threat of lightning.
And even if we've got them like plugged into those
surge protectors,
yeah.
That'll help. But if it's very sensitive, that's a personal decision on how sensitive you think something is and whether insurance will cover it. Obviously, you can get a new TV,
right.
but you're sensitive. That's another reason why they tell people to back up files on a computer, because you could have a fire destroy a house. You could have flooding destroy something. You could have lightning come down and fry the computer hard drive.
Okay, so really the idea is that anything that is plugged into the walls or like, wow, that's a new one for me as far as the plumbing is concerned. But I guess that makes sense. If it's metal, anything that it'll conduct the electricity.
And water is a good conductor of electricity,
yeah,
too. So it's not advised to take a shower or bath or swim during an electrical storm.
Okay. Well, swimming definitely is out.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
And you know, the risk of any particular house being hit at any given time is small, but it's there. So it's just one of those common sense things that we try to remind people of.
All right. Let's talk with someone in Mattoon, line 3. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a couple questions. One, I'm not sure of my terminology, but it seems the last few years we have a less number of heating degree days, and I'm just curious of whether there's any trend there that you've noticed. And the other question relates to deep southern Illinois. I'm just curious. We spent a lot of time south of the Carbondale area, and I was wondering, does deep southern Illinois start at Mount Vernon, or does it start at Carbondale, Marion, or Anna Jonesboro, Caro? Or my wife and I were kind of kidding each other on that. I thought I'd just mention it. Thank you.
Okay. I don't know if there's a specific definition of deep southern Illinois versus just southern Illinois. So sometimes we'll refer, when we say temperature range, we say far southern Illinois. We're usually meaning the far southern tip around Cairo, because we're just trying to outline a range of temperature. As far as the heating degree days, that's an accumulation of conditions through the fall, winter, into the spring. And when the number is lower than average, that means it's been warmer than average over that entire period of time when you look at it as a whole. And we have been below average in recent years. We've had a lot of mild winters. Mm-hmm. So what you've observed is correct.
Mm-hmm. We're almost at the point here where we're going to have to finish. Just real quick, one thing I want to make sure we do is go over the watch and the warning, because we give these things all the time, and I think people are still confused about what does a watch mean? What does a warning mean?
Well, watch means watch out. That means conditions are favorable for a severe thunderstorm, or in the case of a tornado watch, a tornado to form. That doesn't mean your house will get one. Usually a watch will cover dozens of counties and is in effect for several hours. So that just means pay attention to the weather. And paying attention to the weather means watching the weather a little more closely, looking at the sky. Nobody's going to knock on your door and say a tornado is coming. The other thing is you want to pay attention to local media. I'm actually worried that we may end up with a bigger disaster down the road here with more and more people listening to satellite radio, different internet sources, which is fine, but there may actually be less people in tune to a local radio or TV station to get the weather. So when you know there's a watch, pay attention to the weather. A warning means that the condition, whatever type of warning it is occurring or is imminent. And for a tornado warning, it's issued if a tornado has actually been sighted or Doppler radar indicates the rotation strong enough that it could easily produce a tornado. So a warning is a more urgent message, and if you're in the path of the storm, take cover immediately.
And the basic thing is you want to go to the lowest floor, put as many walls in between you and the tornado as you can.
Yes.
If you can get under something big and solid, like a staircase is good. Maybe if it's in your basement, you got a big heavy workbench or something like that, that would be good.
Exactly.
It's also the thing, and I know we've talked about this before, is that the thing that kills people is flying debris. So that's what, so maybe even a good idea if you have something like a blanket.
Blankets,
something
pillows.
Something like that, just you can put over yourself and put around yourself.
Certainly in your house, you should know where you would go if a tornado is coming and where that place is. You want to have a blanket, pillows to cover yourself. If you tend to not wear shoes a lot, people that have lived through tornadoes say, have a pair of shoes there, because when they've been hit, it's not fun walking around on broken glass and other debris.
Yeah. Yeah. And make sure you do for your family. Make sure you have a plan. Make sure everyone knows what the plan is. And I think also people more and more are thinking about that. They also need to have a plan. They need to know what they're going to do with their animals. They need to, they're part of the family too.
That's
so you
right.
need to make sure that you have something in case, you know, have a carrier in case you're going to have to grab an animal and take it away from the house or, you know, whatever. Make sure that you think about what you're going to do with them too.
And the last thing I'll say, the worst places to be in a tornado are mobile homes and motor vehicles. If you live in a mobile home, you have to pay attention to the weather even more closely, because about half of the people killed in tornadoes have been in mobile homes. And when I say that, I'm not making a judgment about mobile homes as a place to live. I'm just saying if you live there, you have to pay closer attention to the weather.
All right. Well, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
Our meteorologist, Ed Kieser. Our show is made possible by Grant from Bodywork Associates, offering licensed massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. Bodywork has opened a new office inside the Oasis Center in the